grandmother. She was, without a doubt, an ungainly young girl, and she grew to be 6 feet tall. Tall women were not in vogue in the small mining towns of Colorado, nor were they in vogue anywhere else in the late 1800s. She was not a beauty, with her pronounced jaw, straight, narrow lips, and legs like the trunks of young trees. Long skirts would cover these until well into the next century. She was, apparently, the only child in her large family who was never graced with a middle name. If there was one, we never knew it, and somehow we did not ask. Now there is no one left who could tell us. At 15, she married a rancher from Kansas, 11 years her senior. He was kind, gentle, perhaps a bit weak. He saw in Jacqueline Chatfield the strength and spirit and gristle he lacked. She never let him down. I do not think she ever went dancing. She never saw a theater production, never tasted liquor. Her formal schooling did not stretch beyond the 8th or 9th grade, but her longing after knowledge lasted her lifetime. Books opened worlds to her. She told me, I read things I had no business reading. I read everything I could get my hands on. She read Plutarch's Lives, Mythology, the Book of Mormon, old encyclopedias, history. She must have read in the evening by the light of kerosene lamps during hours borrowed from precious sleep, for her days were filled with endless chores unassisted by the conveniences of city life. The washing was done in a galvanized tub on a washboard whose legs were extended to accommodate her height. Wire clothes lines strung between house and shed, billowed with sheets, towels, and work clothes, and plain, serviceable undergarments. The laundry, stiff and smelling of sun, received its finishing touches from a series of irons with interchangeable handles, used in succession as they heated on the wood stove. They were called sad irons. She couldn't tell me why, but I knew. Grandma, they're called sad irons because you feel sad when you have to iron with them. If my grandmother felt sad about any of her domestic travails, no one ever knew it. She sang as she went about her chores. I come to the garden alone, sweet hour of prayer, the old rugged cross, with an occasional secular addition, perhaps Let Me Call You Sweetheart, or A Bicycle Built for Two. My grandmother's relationship with her maker was solid and personal. Her Bible and Weymouth translation of the New Testament were limp with frequent use. She never missed her quiet time after lunch, a half hour of meditation, scripture reading, and prayer. Nighttime prayers were offered on her knees at bedside. She taught a women's Bible class at the Federated Church in Orland. She was respected as a teacher and counted many of her pupils as friends, though I doubt that in her entire lifetime she ever had a true chum. It would have been impossible to imagine her exchanging girlish confidences with a contemporary. She made the bread, grew vegetables, killed chickens, churned butter, made cottage cheese. During sheep shearing season, she would feed 10 or 12 around the kitchen table, 3 meals a day. She made her own clothes on a new home treadle sewing machine. The preferred style had a slightly gored skirt, easier to move around in and not bulky, and a wide collar with a bit of ruffle down the front. I am so flat-chested. The dresses were always of flowered cotton, purchased at J.C. Penney, the only department store in town, 15 miles through the foothills, over a mostly dirt road. When the dresses wore out, they were transmogrified into hot pan holders or given to the ladies' circle for quilting squares. I was delivered into the arms of Jacqueline Chatfield Mellon at the age of 9 months and would call her mother for the next several years. Her love for me was fierce, protective, and yearning. She was unique and somehow frightening. To this day, I cannot tell you whether I loved her. She was the rock of my existence, my disciplinarian, my conscience. Most simply put, she defined the boundaries of my child's world.